Hello, and welcome to Fidelity Connects, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Today, we welcome back Mark Schmell, Portfolio Manager for Fidelity Global Innovators Class, Fidelity Canadian Growth Company, and Fidelity Special Situations Fund, all for Canadian investors. Mark joins us from San Francisco today and shares his thoughts on the recent tech sell-off and the upcoming U.S. election. With host Pamela Ritchie, he also discusses the hottest trends in today's market, including ESG, work from home, and travel, and how they affect his portfolios. Commentary surrounding COVID-19 and financial markets is frequently changing. Today's podcast was recorded on September 10th, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
With certain high-flying tech stocks having almost reached correction territory in the last several days, a debate about the future course of tech and related work-from-home home stories has kind of flared up. On one hand, bears contend that tech's nosebleed rise over the last several months will inevitably lead to a nosedive fall, and perhaps economic recovery broadens out a bit. Others believe that the setback was merely a breather and that contemporary market conditions feel more like 2009. Early cycle with a long runway, virtually unlimited policy support, and the once-in-a-generation acceleration of secular trends that favor digitization is all around. So where does the truth lie? Perhaps somewhere in the middle of these two views. And the person who is joining us today can help us shed some light on that. Of course, it's innovation investor Mark Schmell. Welcome back, Mark Schmell. Great to see you again.
Morning, Pamela. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Mark, first of all, no beard, but what's new.
Yeah, I'm joining you from sunny California where you have to wear masks all the time. So having a beard and wearing a mask outside is miserable. So off it came. I don't recognize the person in the picture.
Neither do we. Okay, well, let's begin. It's great to see you with or without the beard. Let's begin with the tech sell-off that we saw over the course of the last few days, last week, beginning of this week. Was the correction enough in your mind?
I think that it is for what it was. So I think what you saw was retail running amok, you know, the Robinhood investors jamming into Tesla and Apple when there was a stock split, which is a meaningless thing, really. You had SoftBank jamming into the market with billions and billions of options. And I think it just got crowded, and a lot of the trades got really crowded. And what you're seeing is you're just seeing that unwind. And whether it was enough or not, I don't know. But structurally, nothing changed in the market. None of the themes changed. Nothing that we care about has changed. So there's no reason for like valuations to change necessarily. But what I do think you're going to see is you're going to see a correction maybe in time and not in price. So, you know, the market's not going to collapse or go down much more, but we're going to kind of go in this choppy sideways pattern for a while we digest all of that, you know, euphoria, if you want to call it that.
Right. So the work from home idea, it's something that you were ahead of long before all of us were working from home. But does it still work? Shed some light on where you see that right now.
That is tricky. That is really tricky. That is one of the big questions in the market is when do you leave the working from home stocks and when do you buy the not working from home stocks, right? So when do you sell Zoom and buy Cruise Lines? And I think that's difficult to forecast. I think that what I've started to think about in, as an early owner of Zoom and from the IPO all the way through now, I have a large position. And I think about that every day. When do I sell this thing? And what I've come to realize is that the virus, while it is a cyclical, will go away sort of thing, has engendered a new way of working. And this way of working is going to be with us forever. So it is no longer a cyclical, I'm going to own Zoom and I'm going to sell Zoom and buy Cruise Lines. Now it's everyone needs to be able to work from home. And if you're like Fidelity or a big bank or anyone, you need to enable your entire workforce to work from home at some portion of the week, day, month, year, whatever it is. And you need to make everyone able to do that. 100% of your employees. It used to be, you know, only 10% of your employees need to work from home. Now it's everybody, right? All the way through the organization. So organizational priorities have changed. And so it's not going to go away when the virus goes away. So if you're Zoom, your business just got 10 times bigger than it was 9 months ago. And I think that the mistake a lot of people have made is, I'm going to sell Zoom and then I'm going to move on. And I think the actual thing that you should be doing is, oh my God, I should be buying more Zoom. And I think that's why you saw Zoom go up 40% on what last Monday, is the market realized.
What did that mean for your positioning? What did that mean for your positioning?
I think it's just a realization that Zoom is actually a very important technology that will be with us forever. And the market is saying to everybody, wake up. This is not a virus stock. This is a secular change. And I love secular change, right? And so there's a bunch of these secular changes. I think that, you know, if you look at a stock like Peloton, for example, you know, fewer people are going to go to this big, sweaty, nasty gym. They're just going to work out online. And I have a Peloton at home, and I've had it for 2 months now, and I'm never going back to the gym again. It's fantastic. So, like, a lot of these changes are permanent. And I think that traders and investors got in the mindset of, I want to trade this. I'm going to sell this and buy this as soon as the virus is over. And that's the wrong way to do it.
But there must be some nuance in there where there are stocks where you leave because maybe we are emerging, I mean, tentatively, but there must be some of those themes that change.
I would completely agree with you. Like people cocooning at home, that will stop, right? So all the things that we've been doing at home for 6 months while we live in our cave will stop. Maybe you'll be making less Nespressos, for example. Maybe you'll be, I don't know, doing less home decorating. Maybe you've already built your new deck or put in your pool. Some of that stuff is very cyclical. But a lot of what has been going on in software and in technology is less cyclical and more of a permanent secular shift. So, yes, there are things you do need to get rid of as an investor. If you think that the virus is going to be over, I think that's a very nuanced thing to do. But other things are very secular and you just need to own them.
So many investors look to you for ideas and particular stocks and your investment style and so on. But even though you don't always love commenting on macro, certainly certain things are going to affect the way you're looking at the markets. And I'm wondering if the U.S. election is one of those things. There's discussion that things will be held up and polls will take too long, and then others say, no, it's going to get through and that'll be fine. What is your take?
My view is this is like Y2K back in 2000. This is going to be the biggest non-event in history. The polls say Biden's going to win by so much that it doesn't matter about the mail-in vote or this or that. I mean, I think the election is over, and it's been over for months. And the stock market has also said it's been over for months. And if you look at, like, for example, Biden's got some big priorities in like environmental stocks. They're all going bananas because the market said Biden's going to win. And if you look at the math, Biden's going to win. And there's this like this little niggling thing, and it seems as though everyone's brain about Trump winning last time, even though he wasn't supposed to. The math says he's going to lose in an epic fashion. I mean, he's going to be epic. I don't think it doesn't matter. I don't think the election matters at all. And I think that folks that are worried about the election are missing opportunities in the market right now, because you can invest on the assumption that Biden's going to win, Democrats are going to come into power, these are the things that are going to happen. And my other thing is, typically Democrats are bad for perception of the stock market. And I think the reverse is happening. I think that every time that Trump goes up in the polls, the market goes down. And the market like doesn't want Trump back. And that's weird. Normally, the market wants a Republican president and a Republican administration. And I just don't, it doesn't seem like that's the case right now.
Let's go into that green idea that you were just talking about. So. I mean, regardless, it seems who's going to win one way or the other. This is clearly an area of interest for investors right now. Why is it an area? Well, I think you're actually in sunny California right now, so that's one of the reasons it's of interest to you. But Mars. Broadly, why are we so focused finally now? Do we think governments are going to move in this direction, or what is this?
I think that governments have been moving in this direction for a while. And I think that what is finally happening is the realization that, oh my God, the world is really getting hot. And, you know, water levels are up and people can see the evidence with their own eyes. And, you know, Australia is burning to the ground and California is burning to the ground. And you finally have this massive realization that global warming is real. Who caused it? I don't know. But clearly we could help by not spewing so much carbon into the atmosphere. And, you know, the Europeans are way ahead on this. It's part of the ESG movement. North Americans are slow because we're always skeptical about all this kind of stuff. But I think that everyone's got religion now on the environment, and the evidence is all around you. I mean, those pictures from San Francisco yesterday were horrific, right? It looked like we all lived on Mars. And that's just going to continue. Dry areas are going to get drier. Wet areas are going to get wetter. New York's going to be underwater. And we need to fix this problem. And it is fixable. I've done a lot of work on the space. It's going to take time, but, you know, within 20 years, for example, we could have no oil. Like, we could literally run our current economy with no carbon at all. It's possible. It's an engineering problem that it is solvable. And I think we're going to do that. And I think it's going to happen. But it's going to take time. And it's going to take money.
Is there a lot to buy?
There is not a lot to buy. In the space, it is very difficult to find ideas because a lot of the technology is still kind of in its early stages. Some of it, like solar and wind, is currently economically viable and will continue to grow. Other parts of it, like the batteries and the storage and smart grids that you need to make this happen, still very early. Fuel cells, all this stuff, it's all early and it's all still expensive. These are big industrial problems. And they're expensive and they take time to deploy. And usually when you're buying an industrial type of thing, it doesn't grow quite as fast. And so it's not quite as sexy as, let's say, software. So it doesn't attract as much capital and it just doesn't move as fast. But I think that the government can push it and the government dollars are going to come in like a tidal wave. And there's just not many things to invest in. And so a lot of these things are just going to go up because they're the only game in town.
What about commodities that play to new types of energy production?
Like nickel and cobalt and
some say aluminum.
Aluminum's a terrible market. Aluminum is certainly a green metal. And I'm an old aluminum analyst. I covered Alco and Alcan 20 years ago. I know that space very well. It's a tough one to invest in. Generally, buying the underlying commodity that benefits from a trend is a bad way to invest. You're best to own, the best bottleneck technologies or the leading edge technology. Somebody who's innovating rather than owning the actual underlying commodity. So yeah, I'm not touching any of those things.
One commodity you like, which isn't really a commodity, well, it depends on who you ask, is gold, I think. Or you did last time we spoke to you. Still a fan?
Yeah, I still like gold. But this virus and the stimulus that we put in place, the only way we can pay it off is to deflate our dollars. So gold works. And there's no way that governments around the world are going to raise taxes to 70% to try and pay off this debt. They're just going to inflate it away. There's no inflation. If you're a central bank, you just keep printing money like crazy, mailing us all checks until there's inflation. And gold wins under that environment. And it has been working. It's like this stealth bull market. It's not really stealth, but it's definitely working. And I continue to like gold here.
The question coming in from one of the advisors watching right now on the broadcast is about your cell discipline. They sort of want to get a general idea of, what type of turnover you have in the portfolio these days. Generally, it's high, as I recall.
Yeah. My turnover, so I've been running money for 13 years now. It's always been about 200%. And that's just a function of I play in areas of the market which change really quickly, and I can't just sit on them forever usually. So, and I'm always moving around, right? So I will find an idea and I'll chase it down and then I'll go buy it. And then if I don't like that idea anymore, I'll find a new idea and go chase that one down. And so I'm always sort of sifting through all the various ideas and trying to own the ones that I think are the best fit for what I want to do. And so that leads to a lot of turnover.
Early in the pandemic, or sort of in the March, April, it was really tough for, I think, everyone to have clarity on what management of companies were doing. No one really knew what they were doing. To an extent. I remember you just commenting on that. Is there better clarity now? For instance, you use your analysts. It just gives a sense of the research that you're doing at this point and how it's different.
There is certainly more clarity now than there was in March. I mean, March, it was pretty crazy. There's definitely more clarity, which makes the job harder, right? So in March, it was relatively easy for me because I had a plan and I could see what I wanted to do. And I bought the stuff that I wanted. Everyone else was freaking out. Now everyone's sort of calmed down. And so the competition's tougher again because they're all paying attention. They're not just running to the hills. So it is definitely easier to see the future. The question is timing on a lot of this, which nobody knows. So everyone's sort of in this wait and see, hope there's a vaccine kind of environment. And we're sort of in limbo as we go through that, which is why it's nice to find ideas that are not related to the virus. So right. Ideas that are going to work all on their own, that have nothing to do with the election or with the virus. And so that's what I'm trying to find right now. Ideas that I don't care about what's going on right now.
Let me ask you this. So when we saw, tech correct, whatever we saw, it's 10% of the correction, generally speaking. Does that allow bigger tech companies to kind of go shopping for maybe some smaller companies they had their eye on for a bit, but maybe this has allowed a bit of an entry? Would we see some buy-ups? Do you see that?
No, it's all still way too expensive. I mean, they corrected like 5%, 10%. Right. I mean, these software stocks are so expensive. There's no way that anyone's going to buy them. M&A is not what you're going to see. And if you do, if you do see Microsoft taking out a software company at a ridiculous multiple, maybe that's a sign that you're getting near the top. But in general, from all the discussions I've had, I don't think you'll see a lot of M&A.
And what about new ideas? What about IPOs coming to market? I mean, what's sort of your view for that, the landscape view for that?
Well, everybody who can wants to IPO right now because the market's so hot. And there has been little differentiation. I mean, we've had some really bad, in my opinion, IPOs come out and they've all gone up 40 or 50%. So there's definitely speculation in the market. There is no question the market is bubbly. And you can see it in the IPO market because some bad stocks are still doing quite well. But that doesn't mean it's going to end anytime soon. And with, as you said at your beginning, with unlimited stimulus, you can keep this bubble sort of moving along. I wouldn't say it's a bubble. I would just say that this very strong market moving along.
Hmm. What about, and this goes to your view on the virus, or whether there is a view on the virus one or the other, but the idea that some people have dipped their toes back into airlines, into cruise stocks, perhaps. I mean, at some point, the thought is that we'll see a real acceleration. Do you look at it that way?
I do think of it that way. I think that that is true. I just don't know when. And I think that dipping your toe is a good way to put it. I do think that when this is over, we're going to have the biggest party you ever saw. People are going to go out and it's going to be like the roaring 20s. They're going to just go out and they're going to spend money like crazy. And everyone's going to go to Italy and it's going to be crazy. We just don't know when that's going to happen, right? And the market's currently telling you it's not going to happen soon, because if you look, the cruise lines and the airlines are not really working. They're sort of working in that they're not going down anymore, but they're not really working. And so I just flew out to San Francisco yesterday. Plane was more full, but it was smaller, and the airports are all still dead. I mean, there's nothing going on. So there's been no real pickup in demand. Now, Canada's a special case because, Canada doesn't want anyone to go anywhere to do anything at any time. Canada's in lockdown, and America's a little bit more vibrant. But yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon. And then there's also the fear of the fall, right? Everyone's got this fear of the fall. We got this election that everyone's afraid of. I don't care about it, but they're afraid of it. And then it's the second wave was going to wipe us all out. And I think there's a lot of fear. And that's another reason why it's hard to get the market to get excited, because everyone's scared to death of what's going to happen in the next 3 months. I think that's an opportunity. I don't think any of that matters. I don't think there's going to be a second wave. And I don't think the election is going to be a big deal. So I don't
think it's an opportunity because we'll see volatility, you mean?
I think we will see no volatility. I think that there will be no issues. I think that everyone's scared to death and we're all huddled in our cave and as investors waiting for the election to finish and waiting for everybody to die in the fall in the second wave. And I don't think any of those things are going to happen. And I think you should just be investing through it and trying to find the right stuff that's going to work over the next 2 years. And it's always great to be investing when others are fearful. And I think there's a lot of pockets in the market right now where there's opportunity that I can see. And I'm investing in those spaces while everyone else is like, oh my God, second wave.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago that, I mean, you could sort of, in theory, see a world in 20 years or whatever where we're somewhat carbon neutral or not, we're not
Absolutely.
Using. So are there any opportunities in between there where you take a look at any type of oil and gas companies? Is that something where you dipped at all? No,
oil and gas is dead. So it's in secular decline. I had this argument with one of my analysts the other day. We were talking about there's one more trade in oil. And the thing I said to him is there probably is one more trade in oil. But trying to get that right is going to be almost impossible. And while you wait for the one more trade in oil, you might just like do nothing for 5 years, right? And so the market might go up and you might sit there on your oil trade and wait and wait and wait and wait. Nothing happens. So picking the timing in a commodity business for the next cycle is nearly impossible. The other thing I would say is that with oil and natural gas and all the whole energy sector, it's shrunk to such a small degree that most portfolio managers don't even need to care anymore, right? So in the S&P, I think energy is like 2%. So if I miss the first 100% move of the energy trade, I have tons of time to go and buy some more. So no reason for me to sit on energy and wait for this thing to move. And in general, I do think the oil's in secular decline. And I think that if there was a big economic or political push, we could really move away from oil and gas very quickly. And that would be even worse for the energy sector. So that's tough news for Canada in general, because we are a petro state. And I think that people need to build their portfolios accordingly in Canada and realize that decent chunks of the Canadian economy are really going to struggle and we need to migrate to other parts of it.
You also mentioned a little while ago in one of the conversations that you actually didn't have much exposure to the FANGs, not really because you weren't interested in what they were doing, but it just kind of worked out in terms of investment thesis. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I don't own very much of the FANGs, the really big stocks. In the NASDAQ, which Innovators is up against the NASDAQ, it's like 40% of the fund is 5 stocks. I generally don't own any of them. I own a lot of other stuff. It's not that my fund doesn't move with the FANGs. I mean, the FANGs are the bellwethers for tech. But in general, I don't own them. I find there's better opportunities elsewhere. And those are the ones that really get jammed, like when SoftBank's jamming into the market. Those are the ones that move. So it's not that they're not good companies. I think that Apple isn't growing fast enough to justify the multiple. Some of the other ones, like Facebook, I will never own. But some of the other ones, they're good stocks that you should put in your portfolio. It's just I don't tend to own them.
Some of the, you mentioned SoftBank, and there were others that were working through sort of the options, a lot of options being put on there. Do you expect to see that continue? I mean, is that a function of we're working from home? Some people have more money. I mean, they pointed to the retail trade. Do you see that changing at all? Are these retail investors in there for good, or does it matter?
So it will change the next time we have a big correction. So I was talking to one of our colleagues, Neil Miller, who remembers the trading in the 60s. He was talking about the 1967-68 market, and there was a lot of retail flow, and he called it the casino market. And he said he had a great year because you can play off the retail investor. I think the retail investor is here for a while until they blow up. And that's part of the investment landscape right now. The Robinhood investor is here. And they will stay until they stop making money, right? Until they lose all their money, which is what's going to happen. But much like the oil trade, trying to guess when that's going to happen, I don't know when that's going to happen. Is it going to happen next week? Is it going to happen next month? 2 years from now? I have no idea. But I do think that the Robinhood investor is here for a while. And I do think that, that kind of speculative behavior is here until it's not.
Right. Okay. And so that's interesting. So it's sort of a washout eventually when it happens in your mind. Sure. The questions coming in is, does this era differ to sort of the 2000s, to the dot-com? Is that also a comparable, for instance?
No, it is very different. So it's funny. People remember that. But when that was occurring, you had all these stocks that made no money, right? Like pets.com and Webvan and made no money. Dot-coms, no one was making money. the software companies that you see, they're all making money, right? They have great margins. They're really good businesses. They are changing and transforming the world. Zoom had the most incredible quarter I've ever seen of a public company ever. They're making so much money and they're making the world better. So it's very different. These are not fly-by-night companies that are frauds. They are really good businesses that you could argue are expensive, no question. But in the 2000s, they were terrible businesses that were massively inflated. This is very, very different. So no, I don't think it's the same. Could it get to that point? Sure. I mean, speculative mania has always happened and they always end the same way. But at the moment, most of the businesses that are being massively bid are really great businesses. Take a look at Shopify in Canada. They just keep executing, right? They are making the world a better place. They are making money. It's a really good company. And so why shouldn't it trade at a high valuation?
Right. So can you get, so these are established names, and you probably can't give us the names that you're looking at right now, but can you give us a sense of the rocks that you are looking under that, as you say, don't necessarily have anything to do with sort of an election trade one way or the other, and that are going to work in any case? I mean, are there areas that you can point to?
So I'm trying to find strong or powerful secular trends that, yeah, are going to last beyond this year or 2 year thing. Technologies that are transformative, that will change the way we think and do things. There's stuff going on in healthcare right now I can't tell you about that I'm looking at. There's stuff in industrial technology that I'm very interested in that I can't tell you about. So I am trying to find things. Pardon me?
Is it 5G related?
No, 5G. No, 5G is pointless. 5G is, see, it's not secular, right? It's a cyclical, everything gets faster. But you're not going to make any money buying 5G enabled anything. That's just an enabling technology. What you want to find, or you want to find transformative technology. Zoom is a transformative technology. It's allowing us to do this. Well, this is Blue Jeans, but you know, same basic principle. That's what I'm trying to find. And then those trends tend to go for 10 to 15 years. And yeah, they're cyclical movements, but they tend to do quite well through that entire period. So yes, there is stuff out there that I'm buying that I'm interested in, but I can't tell anyone about.
And tell us on the global scene, just remind us, you know, what your mandate is. Lots of people have been talking about, you know, a time perhaps to shift away from exposure to the US, more to global. Not everyone thinks that, but what can you do? Are you interested globally?
So I am interested globally. I'm more interested in thematic and secular change. So I don't care where it is. And I don't think about, oh, I have to own Japan or I have to own Korea, or I don't care about that. I just want to own the best companies levered to the best things and wherever they happen to be. And so that's where my portfolio tends to end up. So I don't think about the world in terms of geographic. I think about it in terms of thematic base.
Fantastic. We're going to leave it on that note. I hope you will join us again, Mark Schnell. Thanks so much for joining us on Fidelity Connect.
Thanks, Pamela. Bye, everyone.
Good to see you. All the best.
Thank you for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. For more information on future live webcasts, please visit fidelity.ca. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.